Well, we have 9 more holes to go, so how about you two fellas follow me to the 10th tee?
On to the back 9, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of Hall of Famer Billy Casper.
2 players down the middle on the 10th hole.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Yeah, thank you very much, and welcome in to Real Golf Radio. It's hour number 2, the back 9 of the show. We're going to talk a little Players' Championship. We're going to welcome in America's favorite caddy and find out a little bit more behind the scenes on Ted Scott and his impact that he's had on the world number one, Scottie Scheffler, and his win at the Players. And we're going to talk more about this meeting that happened between Yasser of the Public Investment Fund and the player directors and the PGA Tour. So we'll get into all of that. And we're going to get into pressure and how to avoid it with the caddy. So can't wait for that. Should be good stuff. But thanks for joining us here. Follow us on Twitter, or X, I should say, at Real Golf and Real Golf Radio, wherever your favorite podcasts are found. You can download the show and listen at your convenience. But lots of good stuff to get into. One of the things that we haven't talked much about, Bob, was this idea. And you had some thoughts about Rory saying that the team game should be a periphery. So in this meeting, then they're talking about what might happen in the blending of the two tours, that they're really set on team golf. And Rory thinks it ought to be individual golf separate from the team golf, and team golf played in its periphery. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that has really jumped out into the forefront, especially on Netflix, you know, we see Full Swing and that kind of thing, but I watched the Formula One series that they've had on Netflix. Now they've had it 5 seasons. Formula One has individual winners, and they also have a year-end team champion at the end, and they're crowned. And so I think what Rory is thinking, or what he's trying to say, is we need to do something like that where we have individual winners every week. You know, we've got the number one player in the world, but we also can have these teams that are in the periphery that can be winners at the end of the year.
So it's a kind of a season-long points race like the FedEx Cup, but also keeping tabs from
exactly.
A team standpoint. Yeah, that's interesting. So we'll see. Like
exactly.
When anything new starts, it does take some time, and I think this has obviously taken some time. It doesn't seem to be grabbing hold on everybody, but obviously there are some that are really enjoying that what LIV has to offer and so forth. So we'll see what all shakes out in this, and we'll talk more about it as we're just getting started here on Real Golf Radio. Hour number 2 continues next.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Welcome back to Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, and America's favorite caddy.
There are bag rats, and then there are caddies. Baby. Pro jocks who are legends in caddy shacks across the PGA Tour.
While we can neither confirm nor deny the existence of this legendary looper,
here he is, the caddy on Real Golf Radio.
Yeah, the caddy joins us weekly here on Real Golf Radio. Caddy, it was a Players' Championship. One that we really needed, it felt like, and man, did it deliver. How about the way that thing all wrapped up on Sunday, huh?
Just like a major. It's a major. That's all I'm saying. Tell me that's not a major.
It doesn't even need to be a major in my mind anymore. You don't have to qualify it for what. Look, the money that you earn, the prestige, the history that it has now, it's all there.
You know, in a way, I just thought of this. You have the 4 majors. And then you have the Players in a group all by itself. It's different than any other tournament in the world. It's just the Players. It's got its own little pedestal there. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Scottie Scheffler, injured neck, got through it. And then just basically, I'll tell you what's getting me, is watching some of the interviews of the other guys that are talking about Scottie. They're talking about him the way guys used to talk about Tiger when he was dominating. Kind of like, oh yeah, if he's putting, we're all playing for second. They're literally saying that. God, think about that. Athletes don't do that. This guy's special. He's reached a special level.
He has. And it's only happened in just a short period of time. Kind of like Tiger did as well. But, you know, the interesting thing was when Wyndham Clark, he said he didn't know anything or where Scotty was until he looked at the board on 11, and Scotty was right up there with him, and he goes, oh, yeah, of course he is. That's where he should be. He's the number one player in the world. I thought that was very telling as well.
How about that stat I saw on the gram? I'm addicted to the gram, by the way. Don't, if you haven't used Instagram, don't go there. Don't do it. It's like, don't do crack. Don't do the gram. Anyway, this guy said that he couldn't find an instance in the last 50 years where a guy was runner up two consecutive weeks to the same guy who won.
Yeah.
Wyndham and Scotty. Bay Hill.
You're talking Justin Ray. I mean, Justin Ray is he's the statistician god, right? And he couldn't find that. Yeah.
Couldn't find it. Man.
Yeah, he's
now,
unbelievable.
I'll throw it down. I'll throw the gauntlet down to Justin. Find me the caddy that's won 2 weeks in a row with the defense. Anyway. Yeah. We're probably gonna have to edit this show already.
Hey, so you mentioned the Tiger-like stuff that he did, but look, we talked about that earlier in the show, Caddy, in the sense that Tiger was the guy that if he was behind, he would get out there early, he would post a number, and then he would say, come and get me, and the guys would kind of fall apart behind him, and that's exactly what happened. You know, you see Scheffler go out there and post a 64. He holed out on four. He was doing those kind of things that, you know, just incites the crowd, gets him fired up, gets him on a roll, and then everybody else is going, uh-oh, and they blink. You know, Bob mentioned, you know, that Clark and Schauffele blinked first. Schauffele, not Scheffler. And that's exactly right. That is Tiger-like. And now I thought Scheffler did a good job of blowing off the Tiger comparisons, and rightly so, that he kind of stands in a league of his own. But it can be Tiger-like, and that's what Scheffler's doing right now. It's Tiger-like in these instances.
Yeah, but the difference with Tiger, certainly in the majors, I'm not sure what the stats are on his 60 other wins plus, but Tiger was generally in the lead going into Sunday. He rarely had the fire a 64 to come from nowhere, as I recall. He certainly never did in the majors. He never won one.
Oh, his last one. His last one.
The last one, the Masters, yeah. First one, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So he never, his winning percentage with the lead was crazy. It was like, wasn't it like 93% or something? It was insane. So Scotty's not quite like that. With this come from behind victory. But yeah, the similarity is just that idea that the guys are like, we're playing for second. And that's pretty rare. I mean, that, I don't know if that was the case with anybody pre-Tiger, except maybe Jack. You have to go back. That just doesn't happen. You don't hear those guys saying that. Basically, bowing down to the king. It just doesn't happen. So that's pretty unique in sports in general, but in golf for sure.
You know, Scotty Scheffler has come out and said a lot about the guy that that you know pretty well, Ted Scott, who is carrying the golf bag, and what he has brought to the table to help Scotty along. What is it that caddies or that Ted Scott does for Scotty Scheffler that helps him to do what he's able to do as the player and the guy that competes on the PGA Tour?
I'd say for most players, the key thing about the caddy is just his ability to deal with the player's psychology in the right way. You know what to say, you know where to stand, you know how to move, you know, you just think with the guy. The better you do that, the better. And Teddy is a psychological master, partly because he went through a 15-year training period with one of the most difficult people to deal with psychologically, and that's Bubba. I think I've said this before. I think that in my 25, 30 years caddying, the guy who had the biggest impact on his player success was Teddy with Bubba. He was able to deal with a fragile mentality very. That's my opinion. I didn't really witness this in person enough, but it's just my opinion on that. So going to that point, you'll hear Seth Scheffler over and over in interviews saying, Scotty kept me in a good mindset. Scott, I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about. You want to keep your player in the good mindset. Think about momentum in sports. Well, that's just psychological, right? Momentum. Oh, the momentum shifted, right? Well, what's momentum? It's kind of just the psychological thing, I think. You know, maybe there's a physical component that hasn't been measured or figured out yet, but basically, you just, you know, you can talk to people in a certain way and it motivates them or it gets them going gets them going the wrong way. And Teddy's just a master of doing that. In general, if you talk to Ted or met with Ted, he's an incredibly positive, upbeat person. He just uplifts people. And everybody likes Ted Scott because I remember a line. This was really cool. So Fanny, remember Fanny, Nick Faldo's caddy.
Mm-hmm.
She went to, Nick got invited to go visit President Clinton in the White House. And Fanny was invited as well. And Fanny told me after meeting with President Clinton that she was pretty sure that she was the most important person that he had ever met in his life. I mean, think about that statement. That's how he made her feel, right? So Ted Scott's kind of got that ability to just, you know, when you're talking with Ted, it's all about you. He's all about you. And that, yeah, I mean, just there's just incredible psychological master is what he is. And then you throw in the part that he knows the game inside and out. He's a heck of a player himself. If you watched him play, you'd think he's a tour player. He's that good. He's really good at golf. And he's got a lot of experience. He's been out there for many years in many situations. Won the Masters twice with Bubba in a whole bunch of events. Worked with Grant Wade before that. Yeah, it's just accumulation. You know, he's an overnight success after 20 years caddying.
Didn't we play with Teddy at CCNC and you that day? Wasn't that who was with us?
Yeah, that was many, many years ago.
Right. Yeah. Well, Caddy, hang on a second. I want to talk more about this caddy-player relationship and how this works. This is really, really good stuff. Stay tuned. More with the Caddy coming up next.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
All right, welcome back to Real Golf Radio. Brian and Bob with you. Thanks for joining us. And we're continuing now with America's favorite caddy. We've been talking about Scotty Scheffler and Ted Scott. And so, yeah, I love that you said that, you know, because you're right. Scotty says, Teddy kept me in a good headspace out there. And it's so interesting. You know, I think there's players that will acknowledge the caddy and his role in their success. And then there's players that refuse to do that because they feel like it's all on them. How much does that say about the player as much as it does about the caddy in that relationship?
I think different people have different needs. You could take that question immediately and say, well, some players aren't giving the guys the credit they deserve or they're giving them too much, you know, whatever. Look, your job as a caddy is to figure out how to have your player play his best golf. It's that simple. At least that's what I think the job is. You know, another guy I'd point out just from observing and never having actually physically caddied alongside him, Greller and Spieth are another team that you look at it and say, you know, who else could handle Spieth like Greller does? Those guys are so good together. But yeah, I sometimes you just need to totally stay out of someone's way. I remember when Bambi went to work for Nicklaus one time, he basically said, just give me the yardage. I got this. Leave me alone.
Right.
I'm Jack Nicklaus. I got it all. I don't need any help. And there's guys like that. Like, I remember Retief. I think Retief's a good friend was caddying for him. He may still be. I've been out there for a while with him. But he basically told the guy, hey, listen, I'm going to take the book. I'm going to do everything. Just carry the clubs and kind of like be my friend. Right? So different people need different things. And so as a caddy, you've got to pay attention to that. I've seen a number of caddies have kind of an ego. And I think they get a little, we call it over caddying. They get a little too into the game and maybe overdo it with their player a bit. So, you know, some people are really good at figuring out how to deal with a player's mentality. And look, some people fit with some people. Some people don't fit with other people. You could, you know, Teddy might not work well. There's a player I won't name who's a really negative person, right? Not in a kind of a bad way, but he just, it's just the way he is. And he doesn't respond well to the cheerleading caddies. And you have that person and everybody's telling him, thinking like, oh, you got to think more positive. You got to do, well, why? Who made that rule, right? It just so happens that this guy's a unique individual. And anyway, the guy who's had the most success caddying with him, the first day he's caddying, the guy hits a shot over the green and hits the cart path. And he says to this guy, this caddy says, where do you think that went? And he goes, well, with your luck, probably out of bounds. And the guy just smiled. He loved it. He loved hearing that from his caddy. Now, who would think that's the right thing to say, right? But it's the right thing for this guy, right? And these two guys have been like the best one, another great caddy player combo. But, you know, really, who would think that's the good thing to do? But it just is for this particular player. So caddying's, they say golf's 95% mental, right? Caddying's like 195% mental. Or psychological, let's say.
Really interesting discussion. I love that. That's good stuff. Caddy joining us here on Real Golf Radio. Hey, I wanted to take a moment and talk a little bit about yardage books again, because that's after you carried the bag for those 30 years, you have been making yardage books for some time, and you just finished the Black Desert book, and I had a chance to play around with it for the first time yesterday. And the greens book that's incorporated, the pick book that shows the lines, all the information that's there. I've played this golf course 20 times, let's call it. So it's not like I don't know how to get around it, but there's some information in there that just gives you a check. Maybe just talk a little bit about when players are sitting there and they're consulting their yardage book, what information is it that they're studying? Let's say on an approach shot, you got some carry distance, you've got where you want to land the ball. I think so many of us think, how far is the pin? Versus what, maybe talk us through what's all going into a shot before, rather than just a laser yardage to a flag.
So here's probably what happened to you. Since you've played there a number of times, it's not like you don't know exactly where to hit it off of every tee. You know, I can only go this so far, this far, this so far right, this so far left, et cetera. And then you an approach shot into the green. Well, you laser the pin, you know your distance. When you start pulling the book, and I think this is why guys at the top level kind of get addicted to the process, right? If I tell you you're 132 and the pin's 8 over the right and the green's kind of soft, as a good top level player, right? You don't really need that 8 cover, and you just need the 132 because you're going to fly it there. You're going to even fly it past the hole a little bit because the green's soft. However, if once the routine is a tour caddy, I'm going to say, okay, you got 120 front and 12, 132, it's 8 over the right. And so it's 24, 32 at, over the right, and it's 3 uphill. So I've just done a lot more stuff than just telling you it's 132 and it's a little uphill. And I think maybe mentally, it just kind of starts locking you into certain precise targets, right? And a lot of people respond really well to precise targeting. What we're doing there is we're getting your mind off anything but your target, right? Mm. And you hear a lot of players say they play their best when they're really precisely focused on their target and not their golf swing, right? So it's just that whole process there, if you think about it. And another thing, too, is under pressure, a lot of people do a lot better under pressure when they're process oriented and not result oriented. So I'm not thinking about, I've got to hit this close. I'm thinking about it's 24 front, it's 8 over the cover, da 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 da. You're going through a process of hitting a shot, and that kind of releases you from result focus to process focus. A lot of people talk about that. They just play better under pressure when they're process focused. Do this. Like, I had a buddy he was a really good kicker in college. I mean, he went to the NFL for tryouts and actually got beaten out by Adam Vinatieri. So maybe he should have kept it. But
yeah.
Anyway, I asked him, I said, man, how much pressure does it put on you when they call a timeout? And he goes, there just isn't pressure kicking. I said, excuse me? There's no pressure? Now, he's got a little different mind than a lot of people. But he said, no. He goes, you get up there, you take your steps, you know, you measure to the ball, you take those two steps to the left. Very shortly after that, the ball snapped. He goes, you don't have time to really feel pressure because you're just going count two to the left. Here comes the ball. Boom, I go. See, it's all process. He's not thinking, I got to make this kick. He's thinking, I'm backing off. I'm taking my two steps left. I'm setting my feet. Here we go. Boom. And it just happens. So I think when you get that book in your hand, even though you've played the course many times, you're kind of doing process now stuff and precise target stuff. And maybe that just helps zone you in a little more. And it lets your body and the golf swing happen, right? Instead of making it like, okay, I'm going to swing a little harder this one. I'm going to, you know, post my left leg a little more coming through on this one. And yeah, I remember talking to Nick Price once about targeting. And I said, what do you aim at? And he says, you know what I do a lot? He goes, on tee shots especially, he goes, I aim at a leaf on a tree. You know anybody who aims at a leaf on a tree?
How many people can see the leaf?
Well, I never really asked. Like, you can see a leaf from like 380 yards away. But it was just cool to hear how precise he was targeting, right? And so, yeah, I'm trying to make the ball fly right at that leaf on that left edge of that tree. I'm like, wow, okay, that's pretty cool. Now, look, I can tell you, too, there's tour pros who, you ask Lauren Roberts about putting, where do you aim? And he goes, oh, I kind of blur my vision and just kind of paint it down a line over here, you know, corridor. So there's the, boom, there's your devil's advocate, complete opposite idea. But you don't hear a lot of that. It's usually process oriented and precise focus is. I mean, can a golf pro really hit it 132 instead of 133? Well, no. But it's like Johnny Miller when he was going to half yards with Andy Martinez. What was he doing there, really? Because he probably wasn't even with 3 or 4 yards of the actual yardage because they didn't have precise measurements back then. And the pin sheet wasn't going to be right and all that kind of yada, yada, yada. So what was Johnny Miller doing? Well, he was just internalizing this incredible precision in his brain and, you know, kind of making himself think, I'm this good and I'm that precise. And look at the results.
I am drinking this up. I am drunk right now. I am just like loving every second of everything you're saying. And
Cassie has pontificated today.
I mean, like if you're a golf geek, like if you like golf at all, like what the caddy just said there in the last 5 minutes, just record it and play it over and over and over in your mind. That was gold. That was gold, Jerry. That was gold. Caddy, we're out of time, but that was so good. Thanks so much for sharing that. Man, good question, Bob, to get that one started. And, man, that was good stuff. Let's do it again.
What you guys just did, I haven't caddied for several years. And you just took me on a journey back to what happened, you know, what was it like caddying on the tour? And it's like I hadn't thought about this for a long time. But one thing I think I really enjoyed about it was you really get locked in, right? You get locked in. I remember Kisner talking about there, asking him about the playoff at the Players, and he was walking from here to there and doing this and that. And he said, you know, I didn't really see the people. I wasn't aware of the crowd. I was just so locked in to where I was. And that's what happens Even when you're caddying, you kind of get locked in, and it's a really, like, I'm getting goosebumps. It's a really cool thing to do, is to get into kind of that locked in mode. It's neat. I guess that's the zone, right? Maybe, maybe you can even get in the zone a little bit when you're caddying, like you do when you're playing a sport. But, no, it's kind of like, I'm like, ah, yeah, that's one thing I liked about it so much, was that kind of, it's fun to do that, to get into that feel.
Well, thanks for giving us some of that insight. That is awesome. There you go. You heard it right there. America's favorite caddy laying it out for you right here on Real Golf Radio. Stay tuned. More of the show coming up next.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thanks to the caddy for joining us there on Real Golf Radio. By the way, this segment brought to you by Black Desert Resort in St. George, Utah. There's a couple things you want to take a look at. BlackDesertResort.com, which is where you can find the details about the resort, the real estate opportunities, and everything that goes along with that. BlackDesertEvents.com will give you the insights on how to be involved with the PGA and the LPGA Tour events that are coming, how you can buy tickets, and so forth. So check out both of those, which is super cool. But I'll tell you what, from a real estate standpoint, it's a great time to get in. The Family Village is the newest and latest offering. This is the condos that surround the water park. So we're talking Lazy River, Rapid River, a couple of surf wave pools, lounge decks, palm trees. This place is going to be so fun for the whole family and something that you're going to want to be a part of. Of course, the golf course and everything else that goes along with the resort is right there at your fingertips. Check out BlackDesertResort.com for more information. And thanks again for joining us here on the show. And boy, Bob, the caddy got goosebumps from our interview. I mean, that's super cool. And by the way, hats off to you for asking the question that prompted that whole discussion, because it really was a big part of it. Scottie Scheffler said it a few different times, and I didn't hear anybody continue to elaborate on that with Scottie about the role that Ted Scott played in his right. success. But obviously it's big, and I loved what the caddy said. It really depends on the player. You know, some players want more people involved or their caddies to be more involved. Some players just want their caddy to be there and give them the yardage and stay out of the way. It's just whatever you need to do as a caddy to make your player comfortable and to be able to perform his best is what you do. And for whatever Ted Scott's doing for Scottie Scheffler right now, it's unlocking some unbelievable golf.
Well, and you know, having somebody on the bag that's like-minded, Ian, as you are, somebody that can make you feel comfortable, somebody that can make you feel calm, somebody that, like the caddy said, knows what to say at the right time, knows how you go through the process of hitting a shot, what shots will work for you in certain situations and what don't. All those things are tied into this. And as soon as Scottie got on the, or as soon as Ted Scott got on the bag for Scottie Scheffler, they became winners immediately. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's number one in the world. He's won 8 times since the spring of 2 years ago, and with the first win at Phoenix. And then he went on a tear, and he's kind of in that mode again. He's figured the putter out. He's a phenomenal ball striker, and I think he's going to get on a tear again this year, and it's going to be an amazing year for him.
Yeah, you're right. And you know what the other thing I loved about what the caddy said is this idea of getting in the zone and the process you go through. And so the caddy figures out how that's done. Some players do it differently than other players, but nevertheless, they figure out a way to get in that zone. And I thought it was interesting when he talked about doing that and being process oriented. The thing that I thought about was free throws. You know, he used the kicker, but with free throws, right. You have your routine, and that's the one thing you can control. When you're in a free throw situation, nobody's guarding you. And it's just you, and it's the same distance every time. The hoop is the same height. The free throw line's the same distance, and you're shooting. The ball is the same size. The rim's the same size. So everything is controlled. And so what you need to now do is just your routine, and you've done it 1,000 times. That's why you practice free throws as a basketball player so much. It, you know, for me, it was 1, 2, 3 dribbles. You know, set, look at the rim, and shoot. right? And I had the spot on the front of the rim. Danny Ainge, yeah, in a basketball camp when I was a kid, said he liked to look at the front of the rim. And so I always started looking at the front of the rim. And so I would get up there, I would find my spot. There's a little dot that marks the center of the free throw line that's exactly center with the rim, right on that free throw line. It looks like a little pencil mark. So I find, mm-hmm, that spot, I put it just inside my right foot, and I take three dribbles, set, and shoot. And I did that over and over. And so you see players, when they get in pressure situations, that they just go through that routine. You're not thinking, I got to make this free throw to extend the game or to win the game, because that's when you can't make it. The pressure is just too much. But if you can get in your zone, if you will, and that, I don't know why I have such a hard time translating that to golf, but I do. Yeah. And I get, even when I was playing, you know, the other day, and I'd made birdie, birdie, eagle, birdie. I had a birdie look on the next hole, and it started to get in my mind, oh my gosh, I'm going to make this. And that's going to be like insane. That's going to be 6 under in 5 holes. And I came up short. And that's the first time I thought about it. Before, I didn't even realize where I was. But as soon as I thought about it, I left it short. And so I don't know how to figure that out with golf, to be able to get in that space. But I love watching these guys do that. And that's what Scottie Scheffler did. He just blanked out of in that final round, shot 64 and won the Players.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, having caddied for my dad and been around my dad for a long time, 52 wins, 3 majors, Ryder Cups, the whole 9 yards. My dad definitely had a pre-shot routine when he played the game of golf. And, you know, we'd stand there, he'd be looking at the shot, he'd be kind of checking the wind and everything. And, you know, he'd say, how far is it? And I'd just give him a number. I wouldn't give him to the front. I wouldn't give him anything. I'd give him the number and let him figure it out, where other players want to know what it is to the front, how far it is back, what is it to carry, how much do they have behind the hole, that kind of that. My dad didn't want that, because he was already computing into his mind exactly what helped him to hit the best type of shot. Okay, he'd take the club out of the bag. He'd take a couple little brushes on the ground, practice swings or whatever, and then he'd get over the ball. If at any time he was distracted, the wind switched or anything like that, he would stop, club would go back in the bag, and we'd reset the whole process all over again for him to be able to hit the best shot. And that's just the way he did it. And that's the way the guys do it on tour now. It's amazing to see what they do when they get going and they're totally involved and bought into the whole process of hitting a shot and playing a great round of golf.
All right. I can already hear people driving along going, oh my gosh, this is the problem with slow play. Would you say your dad was a slow player?
My dad was not a slow player. His whole process from taking the club, from me giving him the yardage and everything, taking the club out of the bag, maybe 20, 25 seconds.
Plenty. Well, under the time.
It was really quick. Okay. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And especially back then, the guys all played pretty quick back then.
Yes.
I feel like they played a lot quicker than they did maybe today.
Yeah, Jack was the guy who was known for being a little slow, but Jack always said that he played as quick as his playing partners or the group in front of him played. So, but most of the guys, they would just hit and go.
Interesting. I love this. This is great stuff. I'd like to find a way to be able to lock in with a routine without taking more time. So not to delay, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that's the key, because for sure, when you do that, if you can focus, I think you're going to play some better golf. But anyway, let's jump on, because we got just a few minutes left in the show. So we did a whole hour there with the caddy. Hope you enjoyed that. I thought that was really, really good stuff. The caddy told us afterwards that was his favorite show he's ever done. So he's going to save that. He said he's going to send it to Ted Scott, too, by the way, to listen. So that'll be fun to hear what Teddy has to say about all of that. Let's talk about some master stuff, and then we'll wrap up with the players and then that PIF meeting. The Masters is coming up, and we're excited, just a few weeks away now. And got a couple of the Texas two-step, and then it's off to Augusta. John Rahm and the menu was announced for the Champions Dinner. I'll let you go through it, because I don't even know how to pronounce it, let alone know exactly what it is.
Well, it's interesting. They have it on the Golf Channel in English and also kind of in Spanish too. But the start of his menu is what they call tapas, or starters, appetizers, so to speak. Acorn cord corn-fed Iberian ham with cured pork loin. So then he's got Idia Baza or Zabal.
There we go.
Idia Zabal, cheese and black truffle, Spanish omelet with onions and confit potatoes. Then you also have creamy chicken fritters with confit potatoes. I guess he likes potatoes. And Basque crab salad with potato. So those are the tapas. Those are the starters. Then he's got Basque ribeye with lettuce and peppers. And then he also has on the menu a turbo, which is like a halibut with Navarra white asparagus. And then for the dessert is a puff pastry cake with custard and chantilly cream.
Now that,
so that's what he's serving.
Yeah.
That's what he's serving. But the other thing you always have to know is if things get too out of line for the guys, there's also a chicken dish and also another steak dish that's not on the champion's menu, but part of the menu that guys can always order off the menu.
The club menu.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. It just gets you excited. Hey, and a reminder that the new Masters app has been updated.
Yes.
And I went through it and it looks fantastic. By the way, the Masters is an experience unlike any other for those that have had a chance to do it in person, but it's also an experience unlike any other digitally wherever you're at. They have done such a good job of connecting you wherever you happen to be with as much information. And so that you can just absolutely absorb the Masters, you know, mind, body, and soul, you know, of that from now through whenever you want. But like, it is so awesome that you can literally watch every shot from every player in the field. It's remarkable. You can go on. And by the way, this is the only thing that I know that you can order from the app and the website is the taste of the Masters. Let me just say, do yourself a favor. Get a couple guys together if you want. Order the deluxe one because the first one, the classic only comes with pimento cheese. But you got to get the pimento egg salad and barbecue combo with the cookies that come with it and everything else. If you want to just go pimento cheese and moon pie, that's okay. Yep. But you want to really do the deluxe one, right? And it's $179 and it comes with the souvenir cups and, you know, you're going to just go buy the cheapest Wonder Bread possible because that's the bread that they use. And it's probably not Wonder Bread, but it's just the plain basic bread. Put that stuff on there and just have a good time, man. You will feel like if you've been there before, you'll feel like you're back, which is awesome. So, and just put a little extra sugar in your lemonade and you'll feel like you're there too.
There you go. There's nothing better. It's awesome, man.
Oh, so we can't wait. It's going to be fun. We'll be out there all week bringing the updates and coverage like we do each and every year. All right, back to wrap this up in the final few minutes that we have here, Bob. The Players' Championship. I started the show by saying this. I wanted to kind of end with this as well. It felt like professional golf and the PGA Tour needed this event. And the Players delivered. I mean, the performance the guys put on, Xander Schauffele, Scottie Scheffler, of course, obviously went on to win and become the first player to do so back-to-back of the Players. But Wyndham Clark and his gutsy performance, right? I mean, to set himself up and you know, have that lead going into the weekend and then to fall a little behind and then to charge back. I mean, it was really compelling stuff all the way to that final putt. And if you want to know what this means for these guys, I mean, this is Wyndham Clark after trying to describe what it felt like with that final putt that was oh so close to finishing in the hole.
Obviously, there's positives in it. You finish second, you get a bunch of points and money and all that stuff. But it just sucks. I mean, I've always wanted and dreamt about making a putt that really mattered to either force a playoff or win a tournament. And I've yet to do it in my professional career, so I was pretty bummed that I didn't have one of those really awesome moments. So, I don't know. I'm still a little beside myself. I'm shocked. I'm just so shocked that putt didn't go in.
Yeah, everybody was shocked, right? I mean, the double clutch fist pump and then have it to lip out like that. I mean, that's just what a heartbreaker. Cruel. It's cruel, Bob.
You know, what's interesting is golfers have a short attention span or a short mind thinking. Okay. Not too long ago, he was on the 18th hole at LA North and he had a 50 foot putt that he needed to two putt or else he was going in a playoff, and he knocked it up there about a foot and a half from the hole. That putt was for him to win the U.S. Open, and he did it. And yet he just said he's never done that. He's never been able to do that before in his career, but he's already done it. And he's done it with a major that counts, a U.S. Open.
I think he wanted the, you know, there was, but it was sort of, once he hit the shot, it was sort of a foregone conclusion at that point, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he had to make, it's like do or die kind of situation. Here's Scotty. Here's Scotty on the feeling of winning.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why we put in all the work is to be able to finish off tournaments and to play well at the right time. And, you know, going into days like today, it's nice coming out on top for sure. You know, it's a great feeling.
Yeah, it is a great feeling. And that's the aw shucks. Oh, well, it's what I do, Scotty Scheffler. But look, that guy was in the zone. He was feeling it. He's playing some Tiger-like golf right now, and it's fun to see. It's no reason, there's no surprise that he is the betting and odds-on favorite going into Augusta.
No doubt about it, and I'm excited. I can't wait to get there and to have all of golf converge in on Augusta, LIV players as well as PGA Tour players, and see how it all shakes out during the week.
Oh, man, it's going to be good. You know it's going to be good, and everyone's going to bring their best stuff, including Augusta National, which always delivers. Thanks so much to the caddy and Rex Hogger for joining us. Thanks to Dave Glauser, our producer. For Bob Casper and Brian Taylor, check us out on X at Real Golf. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week right here on Real Golf Radio.
Thank you for listening to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper. Follow us on Twitter at Real Golf and join us every week on the Real Golf Radio Network.